Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, and I am so excited because Jason Fink is here today representing the Quincy Public School District, and we're going to talk about a lot of things that are going on at his school and in the district in general. So first and foremost, Jason, welcome back.
Thank you.
You're like an old hand here.
I guess so, yeah.
Okay, move your microphone so you're looking at me through the... Yeah, there you go. Oh, now I can see your beautiful brown eyes.
That's
okay.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, whatever you want to share personally, and then about your profession with the Quincy Public Schools.
Yeah, I'm the Rooney Elementary School principal. We're the Foxes, Rooney Elementary.
You are, baby.
We are the Foxes, yeah. And so just happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And you've been on the show many times before, and we're going to talk about a lot of different things. But now you have no expertise in this field, but I warned you I was going to bring this up, Jason. QHS has a whole bunch of All-State musicians. Gosh, I don't know how many there are, but there's dozens of them that have made All-State. I mean, there's pages and pages of their resumes. And we all know Quincy's music program is better than most music programs in the state.
Agreed.
I mean, everybody agrees with that. So I was thinking of something that I could do to help the Quincy Public School District, even though I am a graduate of Notre Dame High School. My brother went to Quincy High, and he tried to play the trumpet for a very short period of time. And instead of support from his family, he was told, quit doing that. You don't need to rehearse. That sounds terrible.
You're good enough.
So we're good enough. Yeah. Really, perhaps you should move on and find another interest. Most parents and siblings are encouraging their children to get musical education, not our family, because my brother was terrible at the trumpet and we didn't want to have to endure it. But there is a new, it's a very old instrument, but it is very rare, and it's called a cymbalom. And this weekend, the Quincy Symphony Orchestra had their youth concert, and a young lady there who's only a senior in high school played a clarinet piece that was unbelievable. And I know she competed with all of the tri-state kids to become the youth recipient of that, including many from Quincy. And we've had many from Quincy be the youth winner before. But they brought down a man from Chicago who's in his 80s, and his name is Alex Udvari. And he is a specialist, one of only five people in the United States who plays this instrument called the cymbalom, C-I-M-B-A-L-O-M. And as he was playing this instrument, looks kind of hard to master, probably easy to start, very hard to master. I thought to myself, if he's only one of five people in the United States that plays the cymbalom, why don't we start a cymbalom class here? Maybe we could start it at Rooney.
Sounds like a good retirement plan for us.
Yeah. Well, Jason and I were talking that, you know, if he learns the cymbalom and I keep doing as well as I am on my triangle, that we could go across the world.
Touring.
Just with things like the Quincy Symphony. We could tour at every symphony all over with our cymbalom and triangle music.
But sign us up now.
You know,
we're booking.
The great thing about it is the symphony always invites kids to come free. There were a lot of students there that play in the symphony, that play in the youth symphony. A lot of them, of course, are students at Quincy High and Notre Dame and other schools around here. That music education is so important. And again, just learning, just seeing an instrument. I'd never seen the instrument before. It looks like a dulcimer. It's a big, giant Hungarian dulcimer. But it's got some differences that makes it a cymbalom. But I thought to myself, these kids are being exposed to this. Maybe the next great cymbalom player will come out of this Quincy audience.
Because probably a Rooney Fox. It's probably a Rooney Fox.
Because this guy is old. So pretty soon there's only going to be four cymbalom players in the United States. I don't mean to be rude, Alex, but, you know, Alex was shuffling out to sit down at his cymbalom. He wasn't the one that rolled it out either. So let's talk about music. What is the music program at Rooney School for the Little Foxes? Because we have such a great senior high and junior high music program.
Yeah.
Is there a music program at the elementary school?
There is, yeah. So there's general education music for all kids, and then instrumental music starts in fourth and fifth grade. And Quincy Public Schools does a tremendous amount of things really, really well, but our music education program is fantastic, and I dare you to compare it to any other school. They do a great job.
Don't you think that one of the reasons it is so great is just like when you learn to play basketball or you're playing flag football, if you wait to start on an instrument until you're in ninth grade,
you're behind.
Your symphony is going to sound tame. Your orchestra is not going to sound real good. So this early starting and getting kids exposed to music, general music concepts, it's really an important part of of their whole experience. Do you find that most of the kids like music, or there are a few who are like some kids like math, other kids, you know, that's not their thing. Do you find that most kids like music?
They do. I mean, like every subject, there's always a few kids who maybe it's not their favorite. But our general education music teachers, and Marcy Keller is our teacher at Rooney Elementary, she just does a fantastic job, and it's fun. Like, the kids love to come to music, and we put on some programs. Our second grade program is coming up, and the gym is usually packed with parents. Like, we're standing room only for our music programs in the elementary school, so it's fantastic to see.
So at second grade, what are they playing? A little recorder? Or what do they do? Are they just sing? Or?
They sing and dance, and then they put on a little production. Uh-huh. And we use costumes, and we have a set, and it's a really a great thing to see.
Well, I imagine Marcy Keller, with her theater background and her musical vocal background, does a super great job of that. So anyway, if anybody out there has an old cymbalom just lying around, wouldn't it be great if Rooney School started the cymbalom program that later became the feeder program for every symphony in the whole United States?
Put us in the history books.
Everybody would be a fox.
That's right.
That would be great. Jason Fink, my guest today, and we're talking about activities that happen at Rooney Elementary School, but really that happen with education all around. We just got some reading and math scores back, and Quincy's doing pretty okay. We're back above, I think, where we were before COVID. Gee whiz, you know, at your level that you're teaching children, COVID's starting to become a distant memory. It's a five-year anniversary today of naming it. You know, first they had it. That was in January. We first discovered it. Then it made its way to the United States in January. Mm-hmm. And now today they decided to call it COVID-19, the coronavirus unidentified, but born in 2019. That's why it's COVID-19. How have children rebounded from that? Because some of the kids never experienced it, but your fifth graders have.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we've really tried hard the last several years to identify where some deficits are, and with, you know, our reading interventionists and our coaches, and just working on best practice in the classroom. Engaging parents at home is a big piece that we recognized during COVID, that it takes a partnership between the school and the families to get kids where they need to be in reading. And we don't really like to talk about COVID much anymore. We don't use that word.
I probably shouldn't bring it up because people are like, Grandpa, that's... But yeah. The thing of it is, it started 5 years ago, but it didn't end really until... Well, it's really not over now, but three years ago. Yeah. And so we are seeing some effects. I mean, mm-hmm. without a doubt, it changed the socialization of children.
Yeah. And like anything, any hardship, like it caused us to take a real hard look at what we're doing. And then hopefully we've made some positive changes. So I think with our, we have new curriculum at the K-5 level, benchmark curriculum that we're implementing. We piloted it last year in some of our K-5s. And so we're hopeful, and we're seeing some really good results from our new curriculum. So.
How important is it for the Quincy teachers themselves to have this pilot curriculum program and then for them to say, I hate that we wasted a year, but this really isn't very good, and I don't think we should move forward, or this is pretty good, I think that this should go district-wide? I mean, is it important that Quincy teachers have a say in that?
Yeah, and they did last year. So we had teachers across all of our K-5, our five K-5 buildings, piloting several different curriculums. And they got their input, was part of the process of choosing that as it went to the curriculum committee and then on to the board. And so then they got to live it a little bit, you know, and then so now we're first year full implementation of benchmark curriculum, and it's going well.
I'm in the classroom because I'm a mentor and volunteer every week, at least, you know, for 6 hours every week.
Thank you.
The classroom.
Yeah.
And it's funny. You want to hear something, how old I am? This morning I read the birth announcement of a child I used to mentor. He had a child. I mean, he's married and everything, you know.
That doesn't mean you're getting any older. That's not
But, yes, I just was like, oh, gosh, how sweet, you know. But for the average person, you know, try to get yourself out of education mode, Jason Fink. Try to get back into person I run into at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Knows very little about what goes on at Rooney Elementary School. Has no clue. Hasn't been in a classroom or down a school hallway even. Doesn't have kids, doesn't have grandkids, you know, around here. just doesn't have a clue. What is the education pattern? What are you teaching kids? And you could just pick a grade if you want to, if it's too complex to generalize, because K through 5 is pretty, you know, that's a lot of difference.
That's a lot, yeah.
But I mean, what kind of things are kids learning at Rooney?
So literacy, math instruction, our specials, they get PE, they get music.
That's called a special, folks.
Yeah.
That's PE and music. See, I told him not to use jargon. But what
I
did
used
he do?
It. I used
he
it.
Used music.
Can't
he
help
used
it.
Education jargon.
Social studies and science. Part of education in a K-5 public education is a well-rounded curriculum. So they get it all.
One thing that I've noticed is that you don't just teach math in the schools anymore, because there's also a word problem, so they have to be able to read.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's something that does some spatial thing, and it's not art, but it's, you know, if they're making a graph, they can do a pattern. Look at the pattern it makes. Same way with, you know, social studies. Obviously, social studies also uses your literacy skills, but it may have to use your math skills, too, if you're saying this country is bigger. How much bigger is it? Twice as big, you know? So this seems to be, you know, I don't remember... Well, I just remember going to school and learning stuff. I don't know
right.
that I don't remember what the process was of trying to open my little brain and pour that in. But are you trying to like integrate everything into everything? So it's not just take out your social studies book. Don't think about anything else but social studies, because that's all we're going to talk about right now.
Yeah, a lot of our curriculums are integrated. So reading and reading comprehension is really paramount in all
that's
subjects.
That's the basis.
Got to have that. And then we teach kids problem solving. How to think critically and think through some of those problems in mathematics and social studies and science. So those are kind of the bigger keys. But it all does start with reading and be able to comprehend and understand what you're reading, so you can think critically.
Let's talk about reading then, because I agree. If you can learn to read, then eventually you can teach yourself really everything else you need to know. No offense to teachers, but, you know, Abraham Lincoln did a pretty good job on his own. But, you know, obviously we have a much more, you know, rigorous thing, and it's better, obviously. I mean, it is better. But if a kid can't read, they're really falling behind. And by first, second, third grade, it's pretty much known to the education people who's struggling. What happens when a child is struggling? What do they do at Rooney School and probably every school, even in Missouri and Iowa? What do you do when a child is struggling? They're in third grade. They're reading far below their level. Their peer group notices it, because if they have to read aloud in class, it's painfully obvious that they're not up to standard. And, of course, the more they fail, if you want to call it that, the more reluctant they are to read. What do you do?
So it starts before third grade. So in kindergarten, we really do some early intervention. And then in first grade, we have our reading recovery. And so at Rooney Elementary, we have some fantastic staff, and all of our K-5s have reading recovery teachers that are able to do some really intensive, a lot of times one-on-one or one-on-two intervention with kids to try to get that reading comprehension. We have literacy coaches, instructional coaches in our buildings that work hand-in-hand with teachers. So when teachers identify some students that might be struggling, those coaches and those interventionists and instructional coaches are there to help teachers plan a differentiated lesson to get kids caught back up or accelerate kids. So,
okay, how do you teach a kid how to read when the word is cough? You know, so, C-O-U-G-H, and
so,
you're trying to tell them, sound it out. Well, you can't sound it out.
First thing I would do, I would go to my literacy coach, Heather Humphrey, and say, please help me here, Heather, because she's a master at that.
Isn't it? I mean, is that the old world's cruel trick on the invention of English? Nothing sounds like it's spelled.
It isn't.
Nothing,
it's,
you know.
I think the English language is a difficult one to master. Yes.
You're getting these kids. They're finally getting to where sound it out. Try to make sense in this, you know, in a sentence. I'm doing all this with the second graders, trying to help them with their reading, and then they come across cough or laugh or something ridiculous, and they just look up like, Mrs. Pinky, what should I do? And I'm like, just memorize. Really, the only thing you can do is say some words you just have to memorize.
There is some memorization, and then
yeah.
we've looked at different programs. So, you know, try to Horton Gillingham is a program that we use a lot for some of our kids with IEPs, and just a variety of different approaches. I think what we've learned over the years is there's not just one specific trick or solution to reading to help kids read, so we look at a lot of different ways to help them.
That is the difference, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There is no one solution. Some children actually have a learning disability like dyslexia, or there's something, I can't remember what it is, but they can put colored lenses in the glasses and it helps the child read better. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done shows about that, but I'm not smart enough to remember what it's called. But some kids just need more practice and they need more attention at home or whatever. Some kids just are slower. I mean, let's face it. You know, a kid starts to school and they may be 5 or 6, but, you know, if they're really, really a young 5, you know, they're already a year behind, kind of, developmentally, as opposed to someone who is a 6. That's a whole year out of your life. So you have to know, that's where your training comes in. You have to know who has dyslexia and who just needs practice. That's not something that a parent is going to be able to discern. That is going to be something that takes some specialized care. And do you feel the Quincy Public Schools do a good job in that?
Yeah, we do. Like, I think we have some really talented teachers in our district, interventionists, reading specialists, our reading recovery program. Like, they really work hard to identify what might be getting in the way and then put a plan together to help a kid overcome that. So I think they do an amazing job.
So it all starts with reading, and then it moves on to the writing and the arithmetic. And now, this is a philosophy I've had to learn to adapt, because guess what? I'm not in charge. I'm just a volunteer. Letting them write and express themselves and not worrying too much about how they spell right away. Ah! I have my red pen in hand and I just want to say, ah! But you really do have to train yourself as an adult, and parents probably need to learn this. They're learning this in school just to let it flow. Let those ideas flow. Don't worry about how to spell words. Just try to get some thought process down. That is not the way I was taught.
Yeah.
But obviously, they've determined that this is better, that this actually encourages creative writing, because you can learn, you'll learn the words later. You'll learn how to spell them correctly later. If, you know, if somebody says that's ridiculous, if you can kind of figure out what it means, okay. I mean, spelling the word ridiculous is a higher level skill. Is it, why is that important? Explain that to me, because, you know, I still sometimes buck against that. I want to buck against that and say, no, you have to be able to say, I want you the symphony and spell it correctly.
I think it's just the idea of thinking critically and, you know, trying to get your information down on the page. And that's one of the things that we work with parents with a little bit on, how they can support their kids. Because you're right, like, that's not even maybe how the way I was taught or you were taught and a lot of our parents were taught. So we try to provide parents with a lot of support on how they can help their kids. You know, so it has to be a partnership to get kids to be successful.
We've got the reading, the writing, the arithmetic. These are all very important academic subjects, things like social studies, civics, geography, things like physical education and music. Those are also all part of the well-rounded student. Music is not, should never be considered an extracurricular. That is fundamental to the teaching of children. But there's a point now where there's another component that we're talking about an awful lot, and that's social-emotional development.
Yes.
You spend a lot of time, a lot of staff time, a lot of resources at Rooney and at all the elementary schools, not only in Quincy, but throughout our tri-state area. I can't imagine anyone listening wouldn't probably agree with what you're going to say. How important is social-emotional, and how much effort is being put into it, and is that effort enough?
Well, it's hard to tell if it's enough yet, but I do know that, like, through research we've understood that, like if kids aren't in a good spot to learn emotionally, like, it's going to be very difficult for them. So Quincy Public Schools have done a lot of work recently with the ROE around trauma.
That's
and
the
brain
Regional
study.
Office of Education.
Another acronym, sorry. but we've really tried to work hard to identify, you know, what kids are coming to us with that might get in the way of them learning academically. And so social and emotional curriculum has been really paramount. And so for the last couple of years, we've worked hard with Ron Clark Academy in implementing house systems to help with the social emotional side, hopefully get kids increase their sense of belonging, to increase their sense of feeling like they're part of something a little bit bigger, feeling like they want to be at school. And if I feel like I want to be at school and I feel safe here and I'm happy, then that makes the academic piece hopefully a little bit easier for them.
Let's talk about that attendance, because recently when the nationwide report card came out, all the experts in Illinois, Missouri, and Iowa all were above the national average, you know, just as a state. But teachers said attendance is key. Attendance mm-hmm. is critical. Talk a little bit about attendance. If the child isn't at school, they cannot learn.
Absolutely. You've got to be in the seat. You've got to be in the classroom. And so attendance, like, we work hard on attendance. Attendance has become somewhat of an issue for us. And I think it's not just a Quincy thing. I think it's a state thing and nationally. The last few weeks have been particularly hard with a lot of illness that's going around. But we really, so that's part of why we do Ron Clark House System. So not always is a first grader or second grader always in control of whether or not they can be at school or not. But so hopefully, you know, with PBIS and house systems, we make the school building, we make the classrooms, and, you know, they want to come to school. They're excited about what's happening. And so they don't want to miss. So maybe they, you know, put pressure on their parents. I can't miss today because I've got this activity happening.
Right.
And you're 100% right. Like, you have to be in the classroom to learn. So it's vitally important.
Jason Fink, before I let you go, I know there's some special projects that are coming up at Rooney. You've got a few things that are going on, some penny war. Hey,
yeah.
They're getting rid of the penny. What are you going to do in the future? You got now. See, they'll have to put their critical thinking hats on and say, "What are we going to do next year when we don't have any pennies?"
We're going to have a lack of pennies. So, we do our house systems. We do what's called a purpose project. So, all of our houses have a purpose project, and this month it's Rever, and we're doing a penny challenge. We're raising money for Sleep in Heavenly Peace. So each student is encouraged to bring pennies, and they place those pennies in their house bucket. So the more pennies you raise, the more points that is for your house. And then if they bring in any silver coin, you can sabotage another house and take points away. So it's pennies and it's quarters, it's nickels and dimes. But again, the idea is to get kids excited about something, give them a sense of purpose, feel like they're part of something bigger, and hopefully raise money for a worthwhile cause.
Sleep in Heavenly Peace provides beds for children that do not have a bed. Anything else going on? I think you mentioned there were two things, or did I miss?
I think that's it.
I think you'd mentioned that the second graders are going to have their big theatrical performance.
Yes, yep, that's what's coming up. You got it.
Okay, move over. And, of course, the future Cymbalon Players of America chapter is forming now at Rooney School. Make sure your child goes to Rooney. Do whatever you can to move into that district.
100%.
100%.
Agree.
Okay, and if you've got a Cymbalon hanging around the house, they're pretty expensive. So if you want to donate it to Rooney,
we'll take it.
Jason Fink will take it. He don't know what the heck it is. You can bring in almost anything and tell him it's a Cymbalon. He won't know.
You are
correct about that.
Yes.
Thank you so very much for coming by today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always great
to talk to somebody who really cares about kids.
Thank you. You
can just see it in your eyes that you really care about kids.
I appreciate that.
I really care about making money. So we're going to head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. And we're going to see what's happening in the farm markets today. And thank you very much. Well, we're going to turn our attention now to bees right in front of Valentine's Day. We're going to get a lesson about not the birds, just the bees. These guys don't know anything about birds. They only know about bees. Stan Brickman is here from the Mississippi Valley Beekeepers Association. Welcome to the Mary Griffith Show.
Thank you, Mary.
Glad to have you here. And Bruce Mechnick, who is here, seems once a month, just about whatever he's involved in, is here. Bruce, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, this coming weekend, the Northeast Missouri Beekeepers having their big bee event in Wauconda, Missouri, where they're going to teach everybody to care for bees. But there's one in Illinois, too. So we're here to talk about that. Would you please extol us with those virtues of that beekeeping?
Yes,
Mary. Because it's become quite a competition, I'm sure. Well, who's got the best queen bee?
Ours will be Saturday, February the 22nd, and Saturday, March 15th. Now, if you want to come to one of these, please contact the association. So at this time, we only have like two for the March class and 17 for the February class. If we don't really get enough, we will go ahead and give you a one-on-one and help you get started with your bees.
Okay, so these are two sessions, but they're the same session, so
yes,
you don't have to attend both of them.
Right, just
so
one.
So February 22nd, and where is that at?
The Farm Bureau Building on 36th Street.
South 36th
Street. South 36th.
Everybody knows where it is. Nobody knows the address. Isn't that
right,
one of the things?
Yes.
Down on South 36th Street. If you get to the fire station, you're in the right neighborhood. Okay. Bruce Mechnick, you've been doing this beekeeping thing for a while. Why did you get interested, and why should people care about maybe making their own honey, or if not that, if they don't care about that, just keeping bees?
I've been in it for probably 12 years now, and got into it because my son had too many hives and he needed a place to put a couple, and so I kind of got backed into it that way. But I've found it to be such a fascinating hobby and sideline, just experimenting and doing some different things and being able to learn more about the bees and understand them and in the end produce some honey that I'm able to sell and people really enjoy. So
you said learn about the bees and understand them. Isn't this almost like trying to understand a teenager? You can never really learn everything you need to know, right?
That's right. And they don't always read the same books that we do. And so
you're
you
not supposed to dance counterclockwise. You're supposed to go clockwise. Yeah. But it's interesting because they dance. They do all these different things. The average person doesn't think much about bees, but we should. Right, Stan? Because bees, we wouldn't be here.
There's so many medicinal purposes for the bees that it's you can't even realize. And we're not allowed to talk about them because the USDA's not approved them as a, I don't know.
Therapy. Farm.
Yeah, it's therapy.
I mean, you're talking about, I can say it. I'm not going to get fired. Like bee sting therapy. Now, obviously, that has to be done under some kind of augment of somebody that knows what they're doing. You don't just go out to a hive and say, I don't feel well today, sting me.
I do. I have arthritis in my hands. I have arthritis in my whole body.
So you just go out and agitate the hell out of them and then stick your hands in there?
I do it barehanded all the time. And if I go to what we call a cutout, take one out of a wall or out of a tree, I do it barehanded. I'll get stung anywhere from 20 to 50 times on one hand. Yes, it'll puff up. A couple of days it goes down and the arthritis in my hand is gone. I can go back to fighting on the streets and just have a good old time.
Like don't mess with Stan Brinkman after he's captured a hive. Okay, these are not approved by the FDA, so we'll just say that. But you mentioned the honey. Locally grown honey is better for your body because the bees are taking it right by your house and you're getting the allergen things that you need.
That's correct.
More than that, bees help to propagate all of our plants and all of our species depend on bees. And so if nothing else, if you want wildflowers or corn or kind of a little bit different, but if you want things to grow, you've got to have pollination, and bees are the biggest pollinator, right?
Right.
Your marshmallows, tomatoes, green beans, even soybeans in the field, people don't realize how much greater yield the honeybees can help them have if they have enough bees to help them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of having the bees in the right place at the right time.
Are bee populations on decline or on the rise? Because we had a disease that went through a couple of years back, and it was really, really critical. And so, Bruce, Stan, are we over that now? Or have we learned how to – we're not over it, but we've learned how to deal with it better?
No. The losses are still higher than – we'd like to see, there's also a study that was put out recently that estimated the number of wild hives colonies in the world, and they actually outnumber the managed colonies. So from the from our perspective, with the managed colonies, we're having a lot of problems. The wild bees seem to be doing fine.
Okay, so it is probably something to do with the way we're taking care of them, and we just need to figure out
genetics.
A better way. Yeah, the genetics, and we're not getting, well, they're not and out there finding lady bees all over the place that are different.
Yeah, and our way of keeping bees is stresses them a lot. We do a lot of manipulation management that, especially on the commercial side, and when they have to haul 60% of the hives out to California to pollinate the almonds and then haul them elsewhere, that's a lot of stress on these little critters.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, by the way, it's not almond. You may not know this. I didn't know this, but a lady who owns one says it's almond. She says she owns an almond farm. I said, you're out of your mind. She said, how do you pronounce the fish that swims in Alaska? I said, salmon. She said, then how do you pronounce almond? Almond. Okay.
All right.
So the next thing you know, I'm just telling you, isn't that crazy? Nobody calls them almonds except this chick. And she owns an almond farm. So I just thought I'd tell you that if you're ever out in California with your bees, you can sick them on this lady if she says almond instead of almond. Let's talk a little bit more about this class. So then this class is just to learn more about how to take care of bees in a hive. Doesn't mean you're going to have 50 of them. It means you're going to have a hive.
We recommend two hives, but if you only want to go with one, that's great. Just get started. And the class helps beginners that know absolutely nothing. We started ground zero with you. 13 years ago, I heard it on this station, and I went in. I knew nothing about the bees, and the class just fascinated me so much, I've been with it ever since.
And you now go out and do these bee rescues where people
say,
oh my gosh, this swarm has come, and they will do that.
The queen
will go and find a new place, and a friend of mine does this too. I don't know if she does it anymore, but she took out by Dollar General, or Big Lots, you know, that they were just all over the Big Lots there, and she went out and she got them, and it, really, you have to aggravate them to get stung, because most of the time, if you smoke them and if you get the queen, they'll follow. I mean, they'll just follow the queen.
Oh, they just go right in there.
Yeah.
It's quite, I thought I was had my phone on record, and I didn't, but they just march in. I found the queen, put her in a little cage, put her in the hive, and the bees just marched in like an army, just right into the hive, and I just closed the entrance, and off to home they went. And people sitting there watching like, aren't you afraid you're going to get stung? No, they're quite docile. They have no home to protect.
Right.
They're just looking
for
a place to
live. They really don't want
to
sting you unless they're in an enraged state. Yeah.
And when they swarm, they engorge themselves on honey before they leave the hives. So they're just
full,
satisfied.
Happy,
they're
big,
full,
fat,
happy
floppy
and,
Super Bowl, post-Super Bowl bees. Okay. So
and they're lazy.
So call somebody. Call if you see a bee swarm. But don't be frightened by it. Don't be worried about it. Because when they're swarming like that, they're on the move.
Right.
Okay.
They're looking for a new home. And we teach that in the class. And, we try to enlighten people. It's not an overnight thing with bees. It's a constant progression of learning and acquiring information.
Well, in 13 years, you're probably still. I mean, every year you learn something a little bit different.
You ask 10 beekeepers, and you're going to get 11 opinions. And like Bruce said, the bees do not read the book.
So when you go to the class, there won't actually be a bee there. There might be one in captivity.
Right.
Well, you know, that's, well, we're going to take a break. We come back. We'll close this out. Well, we could talk about this for a very long time. But Stan Brinkman and Bruce Mechnick want you to come to this bee class. Even if you never keep bees, you'll learn a lot about why bees are so important to us.